This is KTOO. Juno Afternoon is next. We'll learn about the upcoming production of Seussical with guests Karen Allen and William Todd Hunt. Jesselyn Rantala will be here with an update on Juno Jazz and Classics, and we'll get the details about Wednesday's encore performance of Pippin with guest Robert Newman. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more, that's next on KTOO Juno Afternoon. Weather for the next few days, no rain, but it will be partly cloudy.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Wisconsin tribe and county are working together on family intervention to help keep adults and children out of the justice system. As Steve Rysom reports, the program is believed to be the first of its kind in the state.
In the last year, there were more than 80 cases in Jackson County where children were legally taken out of their homes for their own safety. Circuit Court Judge Thomas Lister says that's well above other counties with three times the population.
And that problem has risen because our county has historically not addressed troubled families until they're in a crisis mode and the children have to be removed.
A little over half of the cases where children were removed involved members of the Ho-Chunk tribe. To attack the problem, the county and tribal officials are working together to offer early intervention programs and get family members the help they need. Under the plan, tribal social workers can accompany their county counterparts on emergency calls. Ho-Chunk President John Greendeer says they'll be there to console anyone on the scene who is a member of the tribe.
I think to be able to identify and find folks that are willing to work and understand your community puts tribal members in a situation where they don't have to educate somebody on the nuances of our social structure, that we can actually start moving toward healing and developing.
The tribe is also involved when parents come before a judge. A Ho-Chunk judge now works alongside Judge Tom Lister and gives him inputs on any judgments that are handed down. Jackson County and the Ho-Chunk Nation are waiting to find out if they qualify for federal funding to keep the family court programs going. I'm Steve Rysom.
South Dakota's Pine Ridge Reservation has been in the middle of a housing crisis for some time, with more than 4,000 new homes required to satisfy rental and purchase needs. As Jim Kent reports, a businessman from Maine has made a contribution.
There's a brand new home on the Pine Ridge Reservation, courtesy of Kevin Hancock, sixth-generation owner of Hancock Lumber. Hancock says a lifelong interest in the American West in general and the Lakota culture in particular, brought him to Pine Ridge last year to explore the reality of life on the reservation. When he saw how desperate the housing need is on Pine Ridge, Hancock decided to do something about it.
I also really was struck by the lack of economic opportunity and some of the needs that the local people have here, and we just wanted to do something to help.
The Oglala Sioux Tribe's Partnership for Housing spokesperson, Pinky Clifford, says one house doesn't make much of a dent in the huge number of homes needed, but it's a start.
It makes a difference. You know, if you look at the whole housing issue at once, it's overwhelming. It will depress you, it will suppress you, distress you. But I look at it one house at a time, and that's how we can change the face of housing here on the Pine Ridge. One house at a time.
Hancock isn't saying whether he's planning more homes on Pine Ridge. Pinky Clifford says the house Kevin Hancock donated should be ready to live in sometime this week. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Legislation was introduced in the U.S. House Friday for the Little Shell Chippewa tribe. The bill is similar to a proposal in the Senate. It provides federal status for the Montana tribe and provides the tribe with legal ownership of 200 acres of land. The tribe has gone through Congress and the Bureau of Indian Affairs in attempts for recognition. Its fight to gain the status goes back to the 1930s. During this month in 1948, a federal court ruled New Mexico had discriminated against Indians by restricting their vote. More than a month earlier, Miguel Trujillo Sr. from Isleta Pueblo attempted to register to vote and was refused. He sued the state and is credited for making it possible for Native Americans in New Mexico to vote. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Good afternoon and welcome to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling. And our engineer on the board today is Jeff Brown. Glad to have you with us. Our first guests today are Karen Allen. She's on the board of directors of Theater Latitude 58, and Todd Hunt, who is the artistic director of Opera To Go. And they're here to talk about the upcoming production of Seussical, which I told them I know not the first thing about, which will make this a good conversation because perhaps there are folks out there who also would like to know more. So tell us the basics first. What is it? When is it?
Seussical the Musical is a big musical extravaganza based on the stories of Dr. Seuss. And it centers around the story of Horton the Elephant, when he finds his little dust speck with the planet Who, and when he hatches the lazy bird's egg. And it has 28 musical numbers, and it has bits and pieces from almost every book Dr. Seuss wrote.
Just that short introduction brings back memories very, very quickly. I love that. And when will this be happening?
We will be performing on the Thunder Mountain High School stage the 21st to the 24th of November, the weekend before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got some advanced PR going on here. So tell us about, is this something that's original or has this been performed before? And what ages will be performing in it?
Seussical premiered on Broadway, I think, in 2001, okay. And it didn't do terribly well there, but it has been hugely popular with community and youth theater organizations throughout the country because it is both very accessible for all ages and it's a lot of fun. And because we're collaborating with Opera To Go on this show, we are going to have a functionally all-ages cast. We will have people from 8 to 108, and if you're not 109 and 10, feel free to audition too.
Todd, anything to add there in terms of the music parts?
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, sure.
And, you know, could you have an 8-year-old singing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, as Karen was saying, Opera To Go, we're collaborating with Theater at Latitude 58, which is really exciting for us because we had just had a board retreat. A few months ago, I think, and we talked, you know, we really need to start reaching some more kids and try to get a different audience, and then this popped up, and we're like, oh, wow, what amazing timing. We really kind of have to jump on board with this, and it's been really great working with the Theater at Latitude 58 folks. And I look forward to getting to work and you know, seeing these kids of all ages in action.
That's a lot of musical numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Is that typical for a musical?
Not really. I haven't done a lot of music. I'm an opera guy, but the musicals I've worked on, you know, have a lot of dialogue, and you know, you sit around and wait between musical numbers. But this one looks like it doesn't have much dialogue at all. It's all music, so it's a very big undertaking, I think, for any company to put on, and so I think it's sort of perfect for us to do this in collaboration.
Think of it like the kid version of putting on Les Mis. It's that music dance. It is sung pretty much straight through. The only dialogue occurs on top of music.
Right.
Have you already done your auditions and your role assignments, or is that what you're hoping to let people know about right now?
It's one of the reasons we're here, actually, because we've got the auditions coming up later this month. Karen,
mm-hmm.
Do you wanna...
Auditions are going to be the 24th and 25th of August. We'll be auditioning mostly on the 24th, and then we will have callbacks the following day. And if anyone is interested in signing up, they can look at our website, which is theateratlatitude58.com, and they can send an email to our email address, which is theater@latitude58@gmail.com, expressing interest, and we will send you all of our registration forms and everything else. We run an educational theater program, and that means that everyone who registers before we've run out of spaces gets a part in the show. You sign up, you pay your tuition, and scholarships are available to families who need them, and there's an application that will come along with all of our paperwork. So our focus is to give educational opportunities for everyone in theater and music.
So is the word audition a misnomer?
Not at all. We need to figure out where to put everyone. Everyone comes, and we have to figure out, are you a singer, an actor, a dancer? Can you do all three? Are you brave enough to come on the stage? We have a couple of kids who've been with us for years who love being a part of the theater, love being on, but don't want to say anything. They're just brave enough to go on the stage. They don't want to talk by themselves, so they participate in dance numbers. We have other people who are actively pursuing a career in the arts and want to dive in all the way. There's room for everybody.
What about set design, hands-on work like that? Is there room for youngsters
Absolutely.
And adults who want to contribute on that level?
You know, with our last show, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, we had students work on everything from sets. Our costumes were designed by a kid. Our set was designed by an adult, but children helped build it. Kids worked on props. In fact, we even had a student proofread the script because we wrote our own script. And so we even had student proofreaders on it.
Should folks apply before they show up for the audition? Is that an expectation?
Yes.
Okay.
We ask that everyone at least send an email because we can only accept so many warm bodies. The stage isn't that big. And we ask that everyone who wants to participate in the show participate in an orientation the week before so they can learn about our policies and procedures, get to know us, see how everything works.
When is the orientation?
Orientations will be held the week prior, and I believe we will have them on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings. And if you send a contact email expressing interest in the show, we will write back and give you an orientation time.
If someone's interested in this, what should they expect in terms of commitment?
Ooh, we'd ask a pretty big commitment. We rehearse Thursday and Friday evenings, Saturday afternoons and Sunday afternoons. Now, obviously, unless you're playing Horton the Elephant, you won't be called to all of those rehearsals, but that's the time we ask families to block out.
What's the youngest age of a child that really could benefit from being a part of this, that you found can get something out of it and is coachable?
As I say, we're putting the bottom age on this show at 8 years old, but we're really excited this year because we have so many younger siblings and kids who are so excited to be part of theater. Cinnamon Simpson, my co-director, is going to be teaching an introduction to theater class for children ages 5 through 7 and for any 8-year-olds who are a little nervous about it. And that is going to be offered, I believe, on Saturday mornings. And again, you can register for that on our website. And they will be doing special presentations prior to both the Saturday and Sunday matinees of Seussical. So they'll get their chance to perform on the big stage, but in a safe, play-based kind of environment that's more developmentally appropriate for them.
So the introduction to theater class, when will that start?
That will start, I believe, the first week of rehearsals right after Labor Day weekend.
So it runs simultaneous
Yes.
with the production itself.
Mm-hmm.
Karen, how old is Theater at Latitude 58? I'm not familiar with it, and it sounds like it's pretty active.
We're fairly new. We were founded in, January last year. Our inaugural production was Sunshine. And our mission is to provide arts education for all ages because Cinnamon Simpson noticed when she was directing plays for Northern Lights Junior Theater and other groups that there were a lot of parents kind of standing there in the wings going, "Oh, I wish I could do that," when they watched their kids perform. And so we founded this theater with the idea that whole families could take the stage together if they wanted
to. So intergenerational.
Absolutely. Our first production, we had 3 generations of one family alone. And we have had parents and children performing together in every show since then.
Todd, have you ever coached kids in a musical? You said, I'm an opera guy, and there probably have not been a lot of children in operas.
There are a few roles, and I've done a few operas that have had children's roles, probably the youngest being about 10, I want to say, is the youngest I've worked with, but certainly not in the numbers that are going to be in this. I think we're looking at, what, about 60?
Mm-hmm.
Something along that line.
That's correct.
And I'm talking like two at a time. So, yeah, this will be kind of new for me, and we'll have some help, too. It won't be just me.
What drew you to this, Todd? I would imagine you're very active in the mm-hmm. music scene here in Juneau, and I imagine you're very busy.
Yeah. Oh, I'm quite busy. As a matter of fact, I have concerts the same weekend that this is performing, so I won't be intimately involved in the production. But just reaching out to a different segment of our population, and really a younger segment, too, is the thing that really interests me and interests Opera to Go as well, because we just seem to be, our forces are, just aging very slowly, of course, but we want to try to get some new, younger blood.
And what will be your role exactly? Will you be a singing coach, or describe that a little
probably,
bit more specifically?
Well, I'll be sitting in an audition, so I guess I'll help with the casting and all of that. I'll probably do some coaching as well, but other than that, it'll be oversight for the people that will hire to actually do the hands-on stuff.
What would you tell a youngster or mm-hmm. that child's parent who is interested in having a singing role, and they have, shall we say, an undeveloped voice? What would you say to them to help them develop it in a way that it would be okay for stage?
Well, I mean, it takes some one-on-one or even just some group work, but everybody out there has the potential for, I mean, even the adults who think that they're tone deaf. I'm not really sure I believe in being tone deaf. I think it's just feeling comfortable in your voice and being able to, having the comfort to express that. So
that's encouraging. It mm-hmm. sounds like anybody who has an interest could apply through
absolutely.
The application and
absolutely.
Then check
yeah.
it out.
Mm-hmm. And, like Karen was saying, there's more than just singing. There's dancing and just being on stage as well, which everything is useful.
The show has 27 named characters, not to mention a couple of huge choruses. So even if you're not brave enough to take the stage and sing all by yourself, even if all you want to do is hold up the back end of Whoville, there's room, and we need somebody to hold up the back end of Whoville.
Right.
Karen, what is the tuition then for participation in the production and in the education program?
$250 is our tuition for Seussical, and that is assessed for 8 to 17-year-olds. We do not charge tuition for adults. We charge volunteer hours.
So if I had a child who was very, very interested and we couldn't afford to pay, there's a possibility of a scholarship for my child, and as long as I, the parent, can give some time.
Absolutely.
Okay, what kind of time would be expected from the parents?
We usually ask parents, all parents, to put in approximately 15 hours prior to the show going into Tech Week, and we have everything from highly specialized sewing jobs to helping check kids in and out at rehearsals.
And that would be a period, let's see if you're auditions are the 24th and 25th of August, and then the production is the 21st through the 24th of November. What's that, 3 months?
Mm-hmm.
So you're asking for a 15-hour contribution over that three-month period.
That's correct.
Is that about right?
Yes.
Seems doable.
And, most of our parents have a really good time volunteering. We have so many things that can be done, and really our volunteers drive what we do. There is no way that small theaters in Juneau, Alaska can pay for everything that has to happen. So we use our volunteers, and we love our volunteers.
Is there a phone number if somebody had some questions before they went into the application process that they could chat with somebody?
The best way to do it is to send an email, and then either Cinnamon or myself will call them back, or possibly our board president, Shelley Smith, will call them with just administrative details.
Okay. Are there any other organizations collaborating on this production?
Nope.
Just ours.
Okay, yeah. Just Opera to Go and Theater Latitude 58. So you said the first production, when you first started in January a year ago, was, please remind me of that
It
name.
Was a little one-act musical called Sunshine.
Sunshine. Okay. So is this your third production then?
No, this will be our fourth. Last November, or maybe fifth. Last November, we staged Once Upon a Mattress. In December, with our younger children, ages 7 through 12, we did The Best Christmas Pageant Ever. And then this last April, we did Alice's Adventures in Wonderland.
That's a lot of production, really, in just being around for 20 months. That's a lot of work.
We have been very busy.
Yep.
Good. Anything else you'd like to add about the production of Seussical? It is set for November 21st through the 24th at the Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium. Auditions will be held the 24th and 25th of August, but prior to that, you're encouraged to drop an email to theater at latitude58, all one word, I assume.
And spelled at is spelled out.
Oh, it is spelled out.
Because so it's at gmail.com.
Yes, so
right.
Theater.
Well, that's a good point.
And the word at. And theater is E-R or R-E?
E-R in this
okay,
case.
Okay, so theater with an E-R at latitude58 at gmail.com to get additional information. And there is an application process, and there will be an orientation in the week prior to the auditions that people need to be a part of. Expected commitment would be Thursday and Friday nights and Saturday and Sunday afternoons, not for absolutely everybody, but for most people. And the cost is $250, but it sounds like money should not be a barrier.
That's correct.
Good. What did I miss?
Well, I'm just thinking it's all on our website as well.
Oh, wonderful.
OperaToGo.net.
Which is easier to spell than theater at Latitude 58.
Yeah, so I think we have a lot of information. I'm not sure if it's completely comprehensive, but we have a page dedicated to it, which is always growing. So you can check that out, operatogo.net.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun, and the idea of all ages is something that is unique. So thank you for your time. We appreciate
thank you.
It.
Thank you so much.
I went to his room in the middle of the night. I tiptoed inside and I turned on the light. But to my dismay, he was nowhere in sight. And I'm sure Uncle Walter went waltzing that night. He goes, wah, 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 wah. A new suit to wear, but when he comes in, it's all covered with hair. And lately I've noticed there's several new tears. And I'm sure Uncle Walter's been waltzing with bears. He goes wah, 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 waltzing with bears. Raggy bears, shaggy bears, baggy bears too. And there's nothing on earth Uncle Walter won't do. I pleaded with Uncle Walter to and I managed to keep him inside for a day. But the bears all barged in and they took him away. Now he's dancing with pandas and I can't understand it. But the bears all demand at least one waltz a day. But last night when the moon rose, we crept down the stairs. He took me to dance where the bears have their lair. We danced in a bear hug with nary a care. It all feels like flying, there is no denying. And now my pajamas are covered with hair. We go wah, 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 waltzing with bears. Raggy Bear, Shaggy Bear, Saggy Bear too. And there's nothing on earth Uncle Walter won't do.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, August 5th, 2013. Today in 1884, the cornerstone of the Statue of Liberty's pedestal was laid. Its construction was largely funded by an auction of contributed art and literary works, and Emma Lazarus, 34 years old at the time, donated a poem for the occasion, which she titled The New Colossus. Lazarus was devoted to the plight of Jewish immigrants, and she imagined that the statue would become a symbol of hope for all Ellis Island arrivals. The poem was forgotten for nearly 20 years, after which Lazarus's friends lobbied to have it emblazoned on a plaque and hung in the museum inside the pedestal. From there, the poem went on to define not just the monument, but also the country's immigration policy. The poem ends in the voice of the Lady of the Harbor. "Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp," cries she with silent lips. "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." It's the birthday of Wendell Berry, born in Port Royal, Kentucky in 1934. He grew up on a farmland that had belonged to his family since 1803, and after college and some traveling, he moved back to that area permanently, bought a farm in his hometown, which still had a population of only 100 people or so, and began farming it the way his grandfather had taught him, without any machines. Wendell Berry, who said, "Do unto those downstream as you would have those upstream do unto you." The New York Daily News debuted the comic strip Little Orphan Annie on this day in 1924. It was canceled in 2010 after a run of nearly 86 years. The street-smart redhead inspired a radio show, a Broadway musical, three film adaptations, mass-marketed books, and merchandise that included everything from lunchboxes to curly wigs. Although only a fraction of this happened before the strip's creator, Harold Gray, died in 1968, it was enough to make him a millionaire. Gray's wealth drew criticism during the Great Depression when he used the strip to voice his populist political beliefs, namely that the poor ought to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps without government intervention or assistance. Gray expressed his distaste for FDR and his New Deal in the strip's storylines, prompting one left-leaning writer to label it Hooverism in the funnies. But the public didn't seem to care. In 1937, Little Orphan Annie was the most popular comic in the country. And here's a poem by Joyce Sutphin titled Next Time. "I'll know the names of all the birds and flowers, and not only that, I'll tell you the name of the piano player I'm hearing right now on the kitchen radio, but I won't be in the kitchen. I'll be walking a street in New York or London, about to enter a coffee shop where people are reading or working on their laptops. They will look up and smile. Next time, I won't waste my heart on anger. I won't care about being right. I'll be willing to be wrong about everything and to concentrate on giving myself away. Next time, I'll rush up to people I love, look in their eyes, and kiss them, quick. I'll give everyone a poem I didn't write, one specially chosen for that person. They'll hold it up and see a new world. We'll sing the morning in, and I will keep in touch with friends, writing long letters when I wake from a dream where they appear on the Orient Express. Meet me in Istanbul, I'll say, and they will. Next time, a poem by Joyce Sutphen from her collection After Words, published by Red Dragonfly Press and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. This is Billy Collins for The Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us next time.
And we're in the middle of a Juno afternoon here on a Monday. I'm Laurie Scandling, and with me is Jeff Brown. Our next guest is Jessalyn Rintala. She is the administrator with Juno Jazz and Classics, the founder, of course, of our annual Juno Jazz and Classics, which is now in about its 25th year, I think. Isn't that what we just had in May?
Well, what we're doing, actually, is this Labor Day weekend, we're kicking off our 28th season.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So tell me about the performance that is happening on Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, we have the return of cellist Zul Bailey. This will be his third year doing a Labor Day weekend concert with Juno Jazz and Classics. So it is serving as the launch, the kickoff for our 28th season, and of course will be a fun concert unto itself. It's called Made in America, and he'll be playing with pianist Laura Downs with an all-American program featuring some of our favorite American composers, Bernstein, Brubeck, Foss. I'm leaving one out. That's right in front of me.
I love seeing that Brubeck and Bernstein were together. I think that's exciting and very intriguing.
Yeah, there's a couple things about this program that are fun and exciting and intriguing. And one is that it's classical with an Americana flavor. It's accessible music. And, of course, with Zul Bailey, performances with him are not just a concert. He really takes the audience on a musical journey with him. So it'll be fun, fresh programming, but going through this experience with him is always even more fun and more engaging and more fresh, almost no matter what he's playing. But I think this Made in America program is going to be great as well.
So I see it's set for Sunday, September 1st, 7:30 at the Jack. Will there be time beforehand or after to discuss the program with him? I know that sometimes that is part of the musical adventure, as you say.
Sure. Zul has always been great with our audiences, signing CDs afterward. This concert is actually being performed in advance of the release of his new CD, which will be called Made in America. So I'm not sure what he'll have available for CDs since Juno's getting this special preview performance before the CD actually came out. But he has always been engaging with our audiences. So we do encourage you to come. There will be a no-host bar and hors d'oeuvres available for that kind of chatting, mingling time. So like you said, Sunday, September 1st at the Jack at 7:30.
And is this a fundraiser for the Jazz and Classics?
It is. It is the launch of our 28th season and the launch of our fundraising season. So everything that we do will benefit that 28th festival. That's going to happen May 2nd through 17th, 2014. And on the agenda we have, as we have for the past several years, 16 days, just jam-packed with more than 50 events, more than 30 musicians. So just a great cause for this concert, in addition to, I think, being fun.
How did Zul Bailey get involved with this? I know that Linda Rosenthal is the artistic director, and this is, as you say, this is the third time he's been here, so he must like Juno or be involved in the organization somehow. What's the connection there?
Well, so Linda's husband, Paul Rosenthal, founded the Sitka Summer Music Festival, and Zul Bailey is now the artistic director of the Sitka Summer Music Festival. So his roots, his ties to Southeast Alaska are pretty strong. He has a very strong commitment to the success of the arts, to the success of world-class arts in Southeast, in Alaska, in Juneau. So that's one of the reasons that, we all know what travel is like here, that he's able to return to Juneau every year, is he's already got these ties to Southeast Alaska and has that passion for sharing music in these beautiful but somewhat remote communities.
Mm-hmm. Now, the pianist is, Laura...
Laura Downs.
Tell me a little bit about her and her background. Has she been to Juneau before or part of the Juneau Jazz and Classics production in the past?
She has toured with Zul Bailey in the past, and speaking of Zul's commitment to Alaska, one of the other things that Jazz and Classics and Zul Bailey have in common is this commitment to education and outreach and making music accessible to our community in Juneau, to students, to everyone. And that is something that I believe Laura Downs also shares, is that commitment to developing new audiences and to engaging students and engaging people who don't otherwise have access. So she hasn't toured with Juneau Jazz and Classics in the past, but the three of our organization, as well as Zul Bailey and Laura Downs, we all share the sense of commitment to the audiences we serve.
Will there be any educational events that are part of Zul's performance, Zul and Laura being here for that weekend? Will there be any opportunity for youth or any outreach?
I believe we're negotiating that, but the restrictions of touring life are fun. I believe Zul's either in Australia or just on his way back. There's working out schedules with these world-class professional touring musicians is always fun. So if there's any way that we can work something out, we will. I don't have anything confirmed right now.
Got you. Thank you. And the cost is $50, but it's reduced for students and kids, is that right?
Exactly, and that kind of speaks to what we were just talking about, where I'm not sure if we'll be able to do, an additional performance. I can't speak to that, but we do always try to make it as accessible as possible to students. So students are half off $25, and then your regular admission $50. Again, remember what a great benefit it's for 28th Annual Festival. So
Jazz and Classics. Who came up with the artistic program? Was it something that's a collaborative kind of conversation with the Rosenthals, or is it something that Zul, as the artistic director of his own program now over in Sitka, said this is something that I'd like to do? How does that come about?
It happens a little bit differently every time. In this particular instance, we had the opportunity to do this preview show in advance of a CD, and that really sounded like it was going to resonate with our audiences really well. It just it worked out and came together for this Made in America thing. With the American program, again, the accessibility of it, the fun, the going on a journey, and the special preview, like I said. So in this case, that's how it worked out. In other concerts with other musicians, it's always a little different.
So sometimes there is a collaboration with artistic directors here, or the artist shows up with their own idea, I suppose. Pretty typical.
Right. Well, in the past, Zul Bailey, when he was here, I think it was in 2011, was the first Labor Day weekend. He did a Brahms program with Avadaj and Pratt. And then last year, he performed all six Bach suites for solo cello, which was just an Olympian program. And his ability to do that, the mastery of his instrument, and even being able to sit down and do that performance once, and then did an encore performance because we sold out, doing it again the next day. That's something that you can't really negotiate that. You really have to be a master of your craft for that even to be on the table. So.
Quite intensive.
Yeah.
Now, where would folks buy tickets? I assume there's a Juneau Jazz and Classics website.
There is, and intuitively, it is called jazzandclassics.org. You can also swing by the Jack Box office or either Hearthside Books locations.
So online or in person at those two places.
Yes.
Any chance there would be an encore if you sell out? It sounds like he has an audience that is quite appreciative.
He does have a dedicated following in Juneau, for sure. With the scheduling being on a Sunday evening at 7:30, I couldn't really say whether or not there's going to be an encore, but I would say that he has sold out in his two other Juno performances that we've put on with him, so I would strongly recommend getting your tickets in advance, jazzandclassics.org, Hearthside Books, or The Jack.
Good. Any other fundraising opportunities that you see between now and when Jazz and Classics launches on May 2nd. What else do you have in mind to keep music front and center for the organization?
Oh, I love the way you put that question. I can announce we have Hot Club of Cowtown. We'll be coming back to Juneau on September 22nd. That's also a Sunday. They squeezed us into their Alaska tour, which we're really grateful for. Juneau audiences love them. So we're really proud to be able to bring Hot Club of Cowtown back. I believe just keep your eyes open for our New Year's event, which will also be a third annual benefit for Juno Jazz and Classics. And then I don't have any dates for you this spring, but, you know, we do our 16-day namesake flagship festival every May, but we've got stuff going on year-round, so jazzandclassics.org.
Hot Club of Cowtown, describe their music if someone is unfamiliar with it.
They are a hard-swinging Western, well, swing trio. I'm going to say swing again because they just swing so hard.
Wear your cowboy boots and come on down.
Yep. They put on a really great energetic live show that's wonderful if you want to sit back and watch them play, see the music. There's also, if you can stop your feet from dancing, you are welcome to try. But there will be a dance floor, so there will be room to enjoy the show however you want to appreciate their music.
Do you have a venue for that yet?
That'll be at Centennial Hall.
At Centennial. Mm-hmm. Great. You know, there are, you mentioned 50 programs or shows within that 16-day period. Yeah. What's stunning when I look at the schedule is how many are free.
Yes.
And I don't know if the public understands that these kinds of fundraisers allow those programs
Absolutely.
To be accessible. For example, when they're at the atrium at the state office building mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. in other public venues or out at the university. So the fundraising is part of bringing world-class talent to Juno.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. That's true. It's this sort of thing that makes it possible for us to do our jazz residencies where we have groups going into two or sometimes three different schools in the same day presenting to whether it's jazz bands or whether it's holding a workshop or just presenting in front of an assembly. It's this that makes all of that possible. And a lot of that happens behind the scenes. You're right.
Well, thanks for joining us. We've been talking with Jesselyn Rintala about the performance on Sunday, September 1st, with Zuhal Bailey and Laura Downs. That's 7:30 at the Jack. Tickets are $50. You can look at their website, jazzandclassics.org, I assume?
Yes.
Get your tickets soon. Zuhal Bailey has sold out his other performances when he's been here in Juneau. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Lori.
This is Bird Note. A day of watching birds is nearly always a day of surprises, and an August day brings surprises unique to the season. You can see some songbirds in patchy, almost unrecognizable plumage, as if they were going incognito. You can see songbirds with gaps in their wings, entire feathers gone missing, and most jarring, the occasional bird with absolutely no tail. What's going on? Well, many birds, which by August have just finished the intense rigors of nesting and raising young, now undergo a complete molt. Molt is a cyclic process of feather growth. As new feathers begin to grow in, they push the old ones out. In the next few weeks, some birds will replace all of their feathers. Why do birds molt? Because feathers wear out. Songbirds, like the scarlet tanager and hooded warbler we've been hearing, birds that migrate long distances need to complete this process on a tight schedule. They need to be ready before it's time to strike out for Central America in September. So, sometimes all the tail feathers fall out at once, leaving a bird, for a few weeks, looking rather ungainly. We'd like to thank listeners who contributed to Bird Note during this year's Give Big campaign. Today's show, like many others, is a product of your support. Thank you.
And we're continuing with Juno Afternoon. We have two young men with us here in the studio to talk about an encore of the play Pippin. We have Robert Newman and Aaron Abella to tell us about the production, which is this Wednesday night. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. This is the last show we're going to do of Pippin in Juno. We're going to take it to Scotland. And so we're really excited about this. This show, we've performed it a number of times this past year. And we've been changing it and working on it, and this is the exact like sort of version we're taking to Scotland. So
this is a dress rehearsal where the world in Juno is invited to see how it's going.
Exactly. Yeah. This is just a show to say goodbye to everyone while we're gone for 2 weeks, you know. It's like, we've been working so hard. Thank you, Juno, for your support, and we're going to perform it for you exactly the way we're going to perform it at the Fringe Festival in Scotland.
So you leave Friday for Scotland, is that right? You both look a little excited about that.
Oh.
2 weeks, and when will Pippin be performed as part of the program over there? How many times will you be doing it?
Well, we're performing it a total of four times. I'm not exactly quite sure the dates.
I don't think most of us will be there, but just...
Yeah, good point.
And how many young people from the school, and that's Juno Douglas High School, I assume, will be traveling with this group to the Fringe Festival? 17 of you. And I know you've been working for quite some time on the fundraising.
About a year and a half.
And will the proceeds from this performance go to support the trip?
Yeah, well, we've made all the money that we need to get to Scotland and housing, and we've taken care of all that. What we're trying to do now is just get more money back in the account so we can do shows next year and make them big and extravagant with sets and costumes and all that.
Okay, so this is supporting the drama program then at JDHS as much as anything.
Exactly, for the future years to come.
Giving you a venue to show off your stuff. What time is the program, and will it be at JDHS Auditorium?
This Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Okay.
It's pay as you can. We really just want an audience.
Okay.
We're really excited.
Yeah.
You talked a little bit, Robert, about we've been tweaking the program and getting it ready. How has Pippin been altered since when you first produced it this year to what we're going to see on Wednesday night? What would you say the changes have been?
Oh, well, for Scotland, we've got to cut it down to 90 minutes. So the version we performed back in May, it was like I think 20 minutes or so over. So we've been working on it and shortening it up and just like tightening everything, and then we've been changing the dances and making them harder and more fun to watch.
Who's your choreographer?
Richie Adon.
Mm-hmm.
She's the head director, I think. I don't know the exact. Or, like, whatever you call her, but she's in charge. I don't know, sorry, okay. She's like...
you're reaching for her title.
Yeah, and I can't really find it, but she's awesome, and she's a big part of Juno Dance Unlimited, and she's been, you know, teaching us our dances, and she can't always be with us. I think she's in New York right now, so she can't really help out with us, but we have great dancers in our cast who know what to do, and they're creative, and they're making our dances harder. Same with Mrs. Moore. She knows what to do. So,
tell me just the general outline of the story of Pippin. I'm not familiar with it. So what might a viewer like me expect if I were going to attend on Wednesday night? What's the story outline?
It's sort of like a coming-of-age story about a young man named Pippin who's trying to find what fulfills him and what makes him happy in life. He's basically trying to find what the meaning of life is and how and what will make him happy. And so... he's got this journey to try different things. He tries being a soldier. He tries all different sorts of stuff. And he's being led along by sort of the show's narrator, which is Aaron's character. And Aaron's character sort of pushes him into the path of trying to find what he wants to do. But it's maybe what Aaron wants him to do and not what Pippin wants to do.
What do you want him to do, Aaron?
Well, I can't say because I don't want to give out the ending.
Oh.
But, I like you said, I'm like the narrator. I'm the puppet master of the whole show. And I know, I can sense that Pippin, you know, he really wants something that fulfills him in life. And I know what can fulfill him, but in the end, it's not the best thing. So it's kind of like, you know, people, they want something so bad, but, like, they want their dreams to come true. But when their dream comes true, it's not what they thought it was. And they start appreciating the ordinary things in life.
Robert, is the play set in our time, in contemporary times, or is it set in another time in history?
Well, I guess it's technically set in the Middle Ages. Pippin is the son of King Charlemagne. But the way the play works is it's more set on a stage rather than actually, like, the characters know they're on a stage and the characters can see that there's an audience out there and they interact with the audience.
Kind of like a play within a play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about costuming then? Do costumes reflect in something that would have been, a, you know, 800 AD, or how did that get tackled?
They're all really abstract costumes. And for the scenes where they're going to war and stuff, they've all got sort of armor on and yeah.
Robert, what's your role? You said Aaron plays as he described. I'm the puppet master.
Yeah, I'm technically called the leading player.
Got
my
it.
My name.
All right.
And I play Pippin. Yeah.
You are Pippin.
We've got Pippin.
Tell me a little bit about how much singing is involved.
Quite a bit. It's a very musical show.
And how many solos do you have, Robert, or how many pieces are you in yourself?
Oh, I've got a few songs. So does Aaron. Yeah, and then lots of other characters get their own standout moment.
Sounds pretty rigorous, pretty demanding. What was your
crazy
practice schedule like? We just talked with another theater group that's for young people, and it sounded like it's quite a lot of time. Tell us about your preparation for the play.
Okay, well, it all started with, we've had nonstop rehearsals since Annie, which started, I think, last November. And then once Annie was over, the week right after Annie was over in February or March, Pippin started right away. And then we've just been having constant rehearsals from 5 o'clock until ranging 5 to 8 to 5 to 10 or 11. And until the week or two before school ended, and then we had about 10 June rehearsals from 6 to 10. And then now we just, all of August, we've been busy from 6 to 10. We have rehearsal tonight for our show.
That's a huge commitment.
Oh, yeah.
And that would have been on school nights as well.
Yeah. It's pretty hard getting, like, homework fit in there.
I was going to ask you, balancing that with academics.
You don't get a lot of free time.
Mm-mm. But, you know, socializing with our fellow actors is always nice.
Yeah.
So you said 17 folks are going. Are they all actors, or do you have some folks who are doing the stage management, the set management, and that sort of support?
We have 17 students going, and all the students are part of the show. We have a stage manager who's a student, and we also have, like, our backstage handy guy who's actually going to be in the show as well. He wasn't in the show in May, but now he's going to be in the show. Thanks, Kyle. And we do have Mr. Moore, our vocal director, coming with us. And Mrs. Moore, our director, of course, is going to be there. And we have Rosie Humphreys, our pianist. And Shelley Wright is coming, who was our costume director.
Is the entire 2 weeks at Edinburgh spent doing the show, or do you have some time to do some sightseeing in the United Kingdom? Tell me a little bit about the itinerary of your trip.
For the first couple days, we're going to be in London, and we actually, this next Sunday, we're going to have a whole free day in London, and we're really excited about that, to do whatever we want. Of course, we have to stay true to the buddy system, but we're going to see two West End shows, and that's, you know, the UK version of Broadway.
Absolutely.
So we're really excited about that. And then after that, we take a train to Edinburgh, and then it's pretty much just straight Edinburgh.
Will you, as a group, not only be performing, but watching other youth and other high schools perform? Is that
Definitely.
An expected part of your trip?
Yeah, we're already, like, scheduled to see a bunch of other high schools from around the nation.
We're watching South Anchorage's show.
Yeah.
We hope to, definitely.
Now, how many venues are going to be active there? It sounds to me like it's quite the extravaganza.
Oh, a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I don't
know. We're sharing our theater with a couple other groups, I think.
So all day, probably, every few hours, there's something scheduled.
There's going to be shows constant.
Mm-hmm. How exciting. How many parents are going? I bet your families have been quite supportive. Do you have quite a number of parents and adults joining you?
Other than the adults that were coming, like our directors and our pianist, we do know that one of our cast members has her whole family going. They're not coming just as chaperones. I don't think they want to be chaperones, but they're coming to have the Scotland experience along with us.
Yeah.
Do you know what latitude Edinburgh's at?
I think it's pretty darn close. Yeah, you know. our lovely director, Mrs. Moore, has been looking at the weather, whatever we're having,
they're having
the same thing. So last week, you know, when we had this gorgeous, nice weather that I miss a lot, it's been in Scotland, too, so
quite hot.
It won't be too different for us.
You take your raincoat, though. So you've missed out on good weather by being in rehearsals, I would guess.
It's okay. I can see the
smile on your face. So are you folks graduating this next year? Are you going to be juniors, seniors? Where are you in your high school career?
I just finished my high school career.
So even though
you've
graduated, you're following through on this commitment to the program.
Oh, yeah. We have about three other seniors as well. Three or four.
And Robert, how about you?
I'm going to be a junior when the school starts, yeah.
Well, you've just described a huge commitment on your part to make this happen, both for your peers, for Juno, for your school. If you could put in a sentence, each of you, just describe to me what drama means to you. Because it's voluntary. You don't have to be in drama in high school. Why are you? What does it do for you?
Well, I just love art, and I love being able to put myself out there for other people to see, and I think drama is one of my favorite ways of doing that. So that's what it means to me.
I really enjoy, personally, like looking at life through someone else's eyes and becoming a different character. I can really see perspective through, you know, a lot of other people, and I don't know, I like people.
Well, gentlemen, thank you for your time. And Pippin will be Wednesday night. Is it at 7 at JDHS?
Correct. This Wednesday at 7.
It's a pay-as-you-can,
mm-hmm.
and it's a full-blown, true, live dress rehearsal to see the program that will be performed in Edinburgh, and you guys take off Friday. So I wish you the best, and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is
Juno
KTO.
Employers, do you want to decrease employee turnover, lower health care costs, and improve your bottom line? Supporting breastfeeding women in the workplace makes it easy for new mothers to come back to work. A support program can be simple and can benefit your business as well as your employees. Contact a workplace breastfeeding consultant for a free consultation at 500-8871 or JunoBreastfeedingAlliance.org. Sponsored by Juno Family Health and Birth Center and Search.
Juno, get ready.
I'm ready.
KXLL is helping bring Trampled by Turtles to town, and you're invited. They're playing Thursday, August 8th at Centennial Hall. Doors open at 8. This is an all-ages event with a beer garden provided by The Rendezvous and beer from the Alaskan Brewing Company. And guess what?
What?
It gets even better because local band DNR is the opening act.
Kick-ass!
So grab your dancing shoes and get your tickets at pintsizebus.com. Beer garden proceeds are donated to KXLL. Hey.
You are listening to KTO-OFM. Tomorrow afternoon, you can get a preview of the upcoming season at Perseverance Theater with Art Roach. Darren Snyder will be here to highlight the upcoming Sustainable Harvest 4-H Camp, and we'll talk to Mike Seatry about this week's Golden North Salmon Derby. By the way, this evening's program, Mind Over Matter, will not be broadcast this evening. Instead, Gay in the Eyes of God will be broadcast at 7 p.m. KTO-OFM is broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on these translators in the Valley and Auk Bay, Tune to K276 AF 103.1 in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K22 BT serves Sunahuna at 91.9 in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. Hear KTOO on K210 AS at 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872. KXLL is at 873. And of course, we're online at www.ktoo.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Lori Scandlin with Jeff Brown for Juneau Afternoon.
Secretary on down is for our embassies and consulates to reopen as soon as possible, as soon as it's safe to do so.
But 19 of them will remain closed at least until the end of the week.
It's Monday, August 5th, and this is All Things Considered.
I'm Melissa Blau.
And I'm Audie Cornish. The diplomatic missions are closed because of terrorist threats from Al-Qaeda, and those closures could be extended.
Also this hour, some discoveries on Mars 1 year after the Curiosity.